budget? Do you have the books? You know, we've never seen the books. We haven't seen the books. We didn't see the books before the coup. We didn't see the books during the coup. And we haven't yet to see the books after the coup.
The more things change, the more they stay the same. So, that's the rumor.
So you, to interject here, and to bring in the dirty word again that you did not like, which is corporation, I will say that...
No, I don't have any problems with corporation. I just said that before. You know, when I say that, lawyer and corporation and stuff, I have no problem with any of those. It is that those things were touted as being anathema when you're talking about Pacifica. So, you know, that... let me say then that I'm hearing it, not from me, but from you. As I said, I just couldn't let it pass, you know, because I'm hearing that you have lawyers on the board, not one, but two, and, you know, I guess you have other business people and so on, and, you know, unless they're working for themselves, they're working for somebody, and very likely if we go and check who they're working for, that we're going to find that they're not necessarily working for, if I may, progressive outfits and so on. But, you know, these are things, as I said, that were issues in the past that then are not issues now. And or then, let me say, that I heard in the past that I'm not hearing now. And I raise those things because we have to be serious. That is, we have to be serious about Pacifica. We have to be serious about WBAI. And we cannot, in one sense, say that if it is raining and, you know, and John puts up an umbrella, that is a bad thing. But if Mary puts it up, it's okay. You know, if putting up an umbrella during the rain is bad, it's bad whoever puts it up. If people are found then to be unacceptable because of their credentials, in one instance, they should be unacceptable in every other incidents too. So this is what I'm saying, is that we need to have an understanding that ultimately I was going to almost say how one earns one's bread and butter is one thing. What one's commitment is to struggle. I'm sorry. What one's commitment is to progress. Kind of loose word, but to some of the ideals espoused. That we'd understand to be associated with a Pacifica or with a WBAI. If one is committed to those things, then I think that is what ought to be the barometer, the yardstick, the measurement, and not whether one wears Brooks Brothers suits or Levi denims, because those things, in a sense, ultimately mean nothing, but it is one's behavior that ultimately should determine everything. And that said, I do not want to let or turn loose transparency, because for me, that is, if everything that we go through in terms of writing bylaws, electing board, and things are still not transparent, we haven't accomplished a thing other than wasted 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years. It says since 1995 or 96.
In New York, it was since 92 or so in the KPFT in Houston.
Okay, so let us do this. WBAI New York, you're listening to Labrish. My name is Haptah Selassie, my guest, if I may, resident troublemaker. And I'm enjoying you, Patty Heffley. That is who my resident troublemaker is. I played a song earlier that said, I'm a progressive man and I love progressive people. And I'd have to add my own line is, I'm a troublemaker and I love troublemakers. I have to. I can't help myself here. So I have, as my guest, Patty Heffley, who is a member of the local bylaws revision committee. Our subcommittee, I should say. And she's a listener activist, as you can quite clearly hear. Better told, Rhymers, is similar. His credentials are similar. They're a little bit different, but I don't have time to really go into each one of them. And Romulo Sanchez, who is also here. And I'm going to, as you say, take a little break because we want to come back and deal with transparency and also try to, let me say, tie together the ends of power sharing as we discuss Pacifica, the writing of new bylaws, the prospect of having timely elections for local advisory board members or the LAB members, and also to put in place, let me say then, a permanent, not that the members will be permanent, but instead of having an interim national board, to have a national board that can proceed, I guess, without having to look back about the business of Pacifica, trying to put Pacifica onto some sure kind of footing. So we will just, as I say, rub this one for your auditory. WBAI New York, and the music of Peter Tosh. You should hear some of the stuff that we're talking about off mic, but we won't let you hear that because that's a whole other story. It is another question in its entirety that, well, we'll talk about it, I guess, as, you know, us here, but it is not a discussion that I really want to pursue. Again, WBAI New York, this program is Labrish. My name is Hapte Selassie, and tonight we're having a special program. I have to say that our regular health segment, Cinco Bible with Jabi, will not be heard or wasn't heard tonight or this morning because we're doing this program on Pacifica. And we want to get you that information because, of course, we think it is important for you to have this kind of information because ultimately it is you, the listener, who will have a pivotal role to play. The idea is this, that something is going to happen within Pacifica, whether you participate or no. Something is going to happen. The best thing that can happen to Pacifica and to WBAI is if you are involved. That is you, the listener, the person who is listening to my voice here, is if you are involved. If you're not involved, that's okay too. But ultimately, you can't come back later. See, you can't come back later. Now is the time to pay attention, as somebody encourages you, to pay close attention. Listen carefully, look carefully, observe, think, and of course, participate, become active, or as active as you possibly can be. And if your activism is limited just to having the information, I think that is a good start, because ultimately, there are going to be elections of local area board members, and that is something that you can be involved in. I think you have to be a subscriber to take advantage of that. But but even as a listener, I think it is important for you to pay attention, to listen, to think, to have your own ideas, and to be involved. And as I said, that is what our objective is here. Again, this is WBAI New York, and it is listener-sponsored, non-commercial radio in New York City. Some people like to call it free speech radio, but I don't like the idea myself because it seems as if free speech only happens at this radio. And it doesn't really happen either because, one can speak freely, but sometimes there's a thing called censorship, and if you have to be careful of what you say, it can't be free speech, you know what I mean? And I'm not talking about choosing words carefully for understanding. I'm just saying, period. If you enter a studio and you have to think about, you have to be then careful of what you say. Not because you want to be careful about the information you're giving, but be careful about what you have to say, then it can't be free speech. But it's a nice idea. I think it's a wonderful idea, the idea of free speech. Matter of fact, the idea of being free. And we're here. My guest, I should say, my name is Hapte Selassie. This program is Labrish. And we're here every Saturday morning from 3 until 5. At least maybe until further notice. We have as our guest Romulo Sanchez, who is in studio with us, and we won't be hearing from him, and I think that is sufficient. I've said it before. We have Berthold Reimers, who is a listener activist and a member of the Bylaws Revision Committee, our subcommittee. And I'm saying it with the utmost pride, my resident troublemaker, Patty Heffley, and also a member of the bylaw subcommittee and listener activist. And matter of fact, one of the individuals involved in a listener lawsuit against Pacifica that ultimately precipitated this activity that is happening now, which is the writing of bylaws to see about the election of local board members and ultimately the election of national board members, so that they won't anymore be interim, but that they will be actually functioning in full capacity as board members. Again, we want to thank you so very much for coming, and we are at the point of talking about power sharing, and I said I also wanted to get to the idea of transparency, but I want to ask it as a question. And you are going to, or you are about to say before we took the break, Patty. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to interject one thing, just so people don't think I'm just criticizing certain elements. I criticize everything. And the one thing I want to say are there still are hijackers on our interim board. First of all the boards except for KPFA are not elected. They're all self-selecting. So there has been no elections anywhere except the KPFA renegade board who took it on themselves to elect their own boards. The national board makeup is supposed to be, it used to be there were like 10 bad people and 5 of our side. The settlement made 5 bad people, 5 local advisory board members, one from each station, and then 5 people that we could choose, right? Well, it's all gone crazy. First of all, on the hijacker side, still included on our board is none other than the ex-mayor of Washington, D.C., Marion Barry. And we have, and there are 6 members of the national board are from Washington, D.C. We have 1 from Los Angeles only, 2 from Berkeley, 2 from Houston, 3 from New York, and 6 from Washington, D.C. And so this imbalance is horrible because most of the subscribers come from the West Coast and have no representation. Then we have 3 from New York, 1 being the chair of the board, which holds a fair amount of power, and our executive director is also from New York. So you have that power thing going on, and then we have James Ferguson, Bertram Lee, a real character on the board from Washington, D.C. And so there are still hijackers on there who are working. Some of the other board members from some of the other stations, where some of our votes, like the move back to Berkeley, you know, in 1999, the end of the year, Berkeley was the headquarters, Pacifica's headquarters were in Berkeley. They built a building. The listeners had paid $2 million to build KPFA with a Pacifica adjunct onto there, the national office. And one night, in the middle of the night, you know, the executive director, they piled all the stuff in the car and drove to Washington, D.C. and put all the books in the office of Pacifica in her mother's house in the basement, right? This is what happened in 99. To get this back, we believe, rightfully so, that the national board, the national office should be in Berkeley, where 10,000 people came on the street. You know, you really don't want to leave it laying around in Washington, D.C. too long. There was a vote, a questionable vote, taken after it was agreed to move it to Berkeley, to stop all discussion of moving it to Berkeley, to finally this weekend to move it to Berkeley, right? This is over, several months period. But on the vote, the questionable vote, which was a phone call, conference call vote, people from our side, the non-hijacker side, voted not to move the station to Berkeley, or to cease all discussion of it to move to Berkeley. These are people from our own New York listening area, 2 board members. No, 1 wasn't there. 1 voted. The Houston people had been talked to, and they also didn't know. There were no figures for how much the move would cost. So, you know, it gets very murky about what's where, you know? It's, I mean, I guess it's typical left to some of the stuff, and I said influence still of hijackers that we still have that we hope to get rid of. But that's why it's important to hurry up and get elected people in there that we can recall if we don't like them. And nothing else will do.
But hopefully you like them before you elect them.
Exactly.
So, and hopefully.
I also just want to say, because I haven't said it yet, and what's really important, if people do have internet access, if they go to www.wbai.net, that is the Coalition for Democratic Pacifica New York Chapter's website. It's been serving the listeners since 1997, and you can find all the dirt right there. You can find all these proposals. There are emails of the week. There's not too much. We try to keep just the facts. Don't attack. But you can get a lot of information there. There's also a hotline number for meetings, because the more meetings you come to, you become to 212-465-7562. 212-465-7562. You can get meetings. And WBAI.net. And you can find out lots of information that, you know, they don't tell you here. You can try to find what the budgets are and all that kind of stuff, you know. We're still waiting for the 2002 budget. I mean, the audit, and the 2001 audit just came out. There's no details. You know?
Wait a second. And this is from Pacifica.
Yeah, this is from Pacifica so far.
With the progressive people at Pacifica.
Right, well, you know.
And I'm saying this, I don't know if the expression is correct, tongue in cheek, because I'm laughing at all of this, because I would have expected that. Without people making a request for transparency, because I guess that is the issue that we're talking about now, that people call themselves progressive, people who found it critical of others who were doing the same thing, that immediately, and I'm hoping I'm kind of asking it also as a question in terms of the bylaws, that each station and Pacifica itself would have available a detailed budget as to not only what is proposed. That is, you know, you may have a budget for 2003, what is proposed, and also, let me say, 2001, how the money was spent. And, I mean, down to the paper clips. The $3.45 that was spent to buy tape or something that is rather cheap, you know, thumbtacks or something like that. That all of that, an itemized list, you know, salaries and other expenditures, that all those things should be there, so that there's no question. And, you know, people shouldn't be having to call. That is, when you have report to the listeners and people say, you know, what about the budget? You should say, well, you know, give us a call. Give us your address. We'll mail you a copy. Or send us a self-addressed stamp envelope, you know, so much stamp you put on it, and we'll send you a copy. That type of thing, that would be available. But it seems, in you know, we talk, in the Pacifica arena, we want progressive this, we want progressive that, we want an end to, let me say, reactionary this and an end to reactionary that, that, as you say, you know, the hijackers and the bad guys and all that. But when it comes down to the dollars and cents of Pacifica, the hijackers and the progressives, the radicals and the reactionaries are as secretive as could be. That is, there's no distinction between them there. And for me, I think that of all the issues, whether it is, you know, parity in terms of power sharing, whether you talk about programming, public affairs programming, whether we can recall or not, to me, all of those mean nothing until you can see a budget as to how every penny Not generally, as I remember preparing a budget and having a line that say miscellaneous. And I said, no, in a budget there's no such thing as miscellaneous. You have to itemize everything. So that in the budget there's no miscellaneous in a Pacifica budget, in no miscellaneous in a BAI budget, but that every single penny as to how it is being spent can be shown. And in a sense that... you know, you can call in an auditor to verify that, because I think that is something that has to be done from time to time, at least for the immediate, the next 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 years, so that is something that is standard. Because all the while, for almost every single administration that I've heard of here at BAI or within Pacifica, there's always a question of where's the money? You know, nobody can show me the money. You know, we have a fund drive. It is touted as being the most successful fund drive ever, and 2 weeks after that, we have no money. You know, and people are back saying, you know, could you send us some money? So we want to know. I want to know the idea, because I said we're discussing the idea, I guess, of transparency, as whether or not. Transparency budget-wise and so on is part of the bylaws, or are we just speaking about proportional representation and so on, that is, you know, all of the quote-unquote democratic principles that we're following those, you know, with great zeal and desire, but we totally ignore the idea of transparency or power sharing in terms of the budget, the information about the budget.
Well, I'd like to address...
Can I just say, I'm sorry, just I want, in all fairness, a couple of issues, or the information about the budgets. Mm-hmm. Here's the official information about the budgets. First of all, you have to get an audit. You have to be audited in order to get CPB funding, Corporation for Public Broadcasting Funding, which we've been taking for about 10 years or maybe longer. And this has been, some say that was the beginning of the end, taking government money. Some like it, some don't. So there are audits. What they are, how detailed they are, I don't know. And I was at that board meeting when the hijackers were still in charge. I think that was Houston, over a year ago, where they've got a brand new accounting system, you know, that was like $40,000 and this and that. Well, this accounting system has been not working right. They can't get people to trained properly and all this. Now they want to change it to another one. So I guess probably in some fairness, probably the books were pretty bad over the last couple of years when the really Bessie Wash and was in charge, you know, and had taken, didn't fill in anything. We've got about a $6 million debt or was spent. All the reserves were spent, $6 million, you know, law firms, PR firms. The PR firm that represented Monica Lewinsky, for God's sake, that's the kind of people they were spending our money on, the hijacker people. So there are some little problems with the, you know, there may be some technical, mechanical problems, but these problems, if you want to say, are the last year or so. We're still talking about years of, you know, who's getting paid? How much are they getting paid? These things are really questions. Why did we move to Wall Street? You know, couldn't we have gotten, you know, bought Charis? You know, we could have bought Charis and moved in down there and had like a whole, you know, community world of training and all kinds of things, and probably saved a lot of money. There's questions like that all over the place, and I think are part of this transparency. But I just wanted to say, just so nobody thinks I'm just attacking certain people, there are hijackers still. The finances are probably bad for several reasons, and it will take time to straighten them out. But I say, then Xerox the pages out of the accounts payable and accounts receivable. Xerox the payroll sheets. Why can't we see what's really happening? If they can't do it electronically, then do it manually. Well, why are we in the dark still?
That's my question. You're going to say...
Well, I wanted to bring it back to the question of the corporation again. And when I say corporation, I don't really mean corporation as corporation like in America, but as efficient as corporations do function. As you know, corporations function and they keep themselves alive, except for the Enrons. The way they do that is through efficiency. You know, a treasurer at the national level is not an accountant. So there are a lot of questions also of ability of these people to do the job. How are decisions going to be made, or when decisions are going to be made to decide to hire an accountant and pay whatever money is necessary to have maybe an accounting department for a small bunch of people who would set this up properly.
But if I may, the treasurer does not necessarily have to be an accountant. I think the treasurer has to be someone who understands money.
Money, and has a controller working under them that is definitely an accountant, the CPA,
okay,
which we do not have.
Okay.
So basically what I'm saying here is these issues are also being addressed in the bylaws where, you know, like there should be transparency and the budget should be made available to the internet and to whichever means to the public.
Mm-hmm.
See, these are problems of procedures. And this is also where I'm very, I'd like to think of myself as a maniac in the idea of process, policy, and procedures, which is what I would, this is in the one place where I would blame and accuse the people within this region, WBAI, of not doing a good job. Setting up proper policies and procedures to run meetings at WBAI would have made us a lot more efficient to be able to take not only straw poll but real votes, and we would have been able to have a better way of demonstrating and projecting and talking about, you know, what is the real feeling in New York. So I am very, very, very adamant about the fact that policies and procedures have to be implemented so that meetings can be run properly. I also wanted to talk about the subscriber model issue. You just mentioned to your listeners that they should be very active. And you also mentioned that you believe that only subscribers would be able to vote. It would be subscribers, listeners, sponsored volunteer. And there will be exception made for those who cannot afford to subscribe. That's debatable. But the best thing that the listeners can do right now is to become active and actually to write or to actively send emails and letters to the station to say, yes, we are listeners, we've been listening, so that we can at least have you on our database, or WBAI can at least have you in their database, so that in the future we can make a better educated decision on how to actually really look at what the subscriber, listener, voter would be like.
Well, it would be nice if there was a something at WBAI.org where people could easily just write to someone. I'm not really sure if there is an email address for the station that people could write into, which I think is a kind of strange. I was at one point I was trying to get a cart played at the other stations for a May Day program called Pacifica Matters, with a culture for democracy, and calling to each of the stations to try to get this cart played was a real lesson in how each station operates very differently. In Washington, D.C., I had to have the Independent Media Center make the CD and take it over there, and it never did get played over there. Houston, Texas, where the show came out of, was played on quite often because the new program director and management out there really wants to make their Pacifica radio station into a real Pacifica radio station back to, the mission. KPFA, there wasn't quite enough time, I guess, and it didn't get played there, but there was a process that it could happen. And KPFK had a traffic manager and somebody in charge and took the downloaded file. They were technologically advanced and everything. So every station has like a different way about it, and their policies and procedures for everything are different in all these stations. I think that's we could each learn from each other as well on those things.
I also would like to talk about how to reach various communities through programming. There's always this issue of the election and then empowering the powerless, the oppressed communities in the New York metropolitan area. And one of the ways to do that is to the programming that would reach various communities. I do not believe necessarily that you need to have one individual for each different ethnic group. You have a million people here doing programming, even though I do believe it, you definitely would need diversity of programmers, but it would be impossible, even if you had a complete diversity of programmers, to have someone from each ethnic nationality and groups to address each ethnic group. So therefore, as a progressive myself, I believe that it's the ability of programmers to be open and to be able to address different issues that is more important than actually the ethnicity of the programmer. As Martin Luther King said, it's not the color of your skin, it's the content of your character. Mm-hmm. So this brings me back also to the idea of identity politics that is being played throughout the network. Mm-hmm. And then there's a little bit of race baiting also, which is extremely important because we branding the banner of the oppressed needing to be represented, where we are neglecting the content of what programmers and the stations are doing. We should never forget that the national board that took the station on the wrong direction, that gave us 2 years of protesting in the streets, was mainly composed of black Americans and West Indians. So we have to be very careful about not losing, the focus of what we want to accomplish by just trying to establish what I would call some form of a quota. There's a difference between establishing equal opportunity versus establishing a quota.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you're going to say something else, Patty?
Well, I think that, watching over these many years, I've been trying to, see what's happening, and I got involved just by accident in this whole crazy scheme in about 96. But over the long period of time, I've seen a lot of power grabbing done in a most unsavory fashion, in a very, really unprincipled way. And one of the ways that has been through race. And I know that I am a European, I guess they call me. My mother was German. I have no business talking about these things, but I think that we have to be honest about what's happening. That is true. The National Board was taken over. Now, we can say who put them there as a person of color, then, they do the deed. But locally, And it's happening around the areas. And in Houston, you have a very, the fight is an anti-Semitic fight. In other places, it's something else. In New York, we definitely have race baiting, a serious, serious issue that has been going on for years, but especially through these bylaw subcommittees, through the local advisory board, through the station management, through the programs. I mean, you're here, I'm sure you know, but...
you would be surprised. But anyway,
one of the things that's gone on that's very painful is that there are white progressives that will use the issue of race to push away the issues of other people that they don't agree with. And this has been a serious problem, because once you involve the race issue, which is, to me, one of the most serious issues there is of race, and to demean it, to lower it, to a weapon to attack and bang somebody over the head with, is really doing a huge disservice and is a despicable act, you know. And we've suffered it. There have been people that have just, you know, whatever, one woman has a free mumia button, and one person said, oh, that's your prop, you know, and this kind of thing. And there are people that will use, and the other issue we have, too, is of progressive people so afraid of being called a racist that they will take the cue from any person, either of color or a white person that sides with those issues, in order so as not to be seen as racist, and therefore they don't think for themselves about what they really think is principled. And we have in New York a basically the power structure is a black power structure. In KPFA, it's white. In KPFK, it's white. In Washington, it's black. And so it's not the color, it's the power. And the power wants to stay. The structure wants to stay as it is, and people will do anything. This is
status quo.
Yes, and I really hope that through these bylaws and elections and the process, that the structure must be put in place that can perhaps curb some of this. But that means then, you know, really participating within the station as well, because people like, and also this diversity, I don't hear them talking about anarchists, you know, feminists, anti-globalists. To me, these are also oppressed groups, you know, that are not getting any play in these bylaws proposals that I think are really,
or even if they're not oppressed, they are groups.
And
if you're talking about being inclusive,
right,
it is not a situation of only including oppressed groups.
Of course.
It's a matter of having people having an opportunity to be able to use the facilities, because we're talking about being dedicated to the principle or the idea of free speech, and having representation, having people having then access to the facility then, or the medium, to be able to exercise then free speech, to be able to bring information to a wider audience. And I think outside of the groups then being represented, I think to me the most crucial part of it, and it is something that Berthold mentioned, that it is the listeners that need to have the diversity. That is, that what they're hearing, whether it will be impossible to have someone who represents each group on the air, you know, because then you're talking about 5 minutes or even less of time. But if programmers can be aware and to be then so informed also, and depending on what the nature of their program is, to bring these various voices to the airwaves so that there's some expression there so that the listeners can be abreast, can be informed about things here. I remember there used to be a program on these airwaves that was hosted or produced by Pony, which was Prostitutes of New York. Very informative stuff that people would normally look at as, you know, why that? But as I said, if we're talking about, because we're talking about progressive, we're talking about it being inclusive, I think that what we have to understand is that progressive and inclusive, particularly inclusive, is definitely not something that is monolithic. That is, if you're being inclusive, you have to include or you have to leave open room for those things that you do not agree with in any way, shape, or form, because you're being inclusive. It is like someone who is a vegan being in charge of preparing a buffet for people who eat meat, and insisting that, you know, if they're going to do it, they have to be willing to include meat, regardless of what their personal ideologies are, or back away from the job, you know, leave the job to someone else. Or then being a meat eater and only thinking about then the people who eat meat and not then being inclusive of then people who don't. So I think that having that approach is what I think is needed and is necessary within programmers, within the whole process that we're having here, because I think in my view, you know, some of my observation is that things are so narrow when approached that ultimately what comes to mind is the quotation that Jenny Holzer, who is an artist, said that change is necessary, if for no other reason, but that it allows the once oppressed to become oppressors. And this is what, you know, you don't want to replace, keep recycling oppression. It's just that somebody else is in the driver's seat. You know, in one case, then it's, as I say, a person of color. In the next, it's a woman. And in the next, it's a European or whatever the terms are. You know, in this case, you know, a Catholic. In that case, a Muslim. But nonetheless, what is happening is that oppression is continuing. And regardless of how highly the ideas we may want to espouse, ultimately, it is what we practice that is going to determine whether or not the things that we expose have any legitimacy or any validity. Because if you can say, but what you say is then in contradiction to what you practice, then, you know, again, what is the use, ultimately?
I think that it is also important for, within the context of what you're saying, it is important for also the WBI listeners to define what WBI really means to each and every one of them. Okay? Once that is defined, then you'll be able to have a listenership that knows what it wants and that can command what it wants. An argument I would like to pose against what you're saying, not against it, but, you know, I mean, these are, people might ask, what does all this have to do with the bylaws? These are all the issues of the bylaws. And it's really exciting. One of the arguments I would pose is within the United States, which is a very reactionary country in many ways, you have only one form and one source of information controlled by the government and controlled by very powerful corporations who only seek profit. So therefore, WBI and Pacifica ends up being one of the minority groups that are actually giving alternative information, alternative music, alternative art. So therefore, we have to decide whether or not we want to protect that. and define the context within which WBAI functions and define what we want it to do, or if we want it to be completely and totally free speech. Okay, it would be easy to have it free speech in the country where every other radio station is free speech, so then therefore you'll have equal distribution of different views throughout the country. But if in the, in a country where you have the radio, the TV stations, you know, all controlled by corporate America, and when I say corporate in this sense, I'm talking about greedy power and profit-seeking corporations, mm-hmm. then it is very important for us to try to figure out what really is WBAI to us. You know, free speech, community radio, advocacy for change and progressive movement, or, you know, free speech in that it would let, you know, like a skinhead or whatever speak on the radio. So that it is very important to define that. And then once we define that, then there would not be any hypocrisy because it would be defined. You know, it could be free speech, total free speech, or free speech within a specific context. So, but that has to be defined by the listeners and by a strong discussion among all.
Yeah, what I say is the moment you define free speech, it is no longer thus. You know, it is no longer that. Because the whole idea of free speech defies definition. You know, so, I think it is interesting what you're saying, though, whether we want to define what is to be broadcast on WBAI or on Pacifica Radio in general. And as I say, it's nice to call it free speech radio, and, you know, those are nice terms. No different than what is used in other media, you know, where, you know, because everybody in the United States, every agency in the United States say it is defending and protecting freedom and so on, including Enron and WorldCom and all these, and Tyco and all the rest of them, and DuPont and so on and so forth, ad infinitum. So it is understanding that. In a sense, if we're playing tennis, we have to play by the rules of tennis. We may not play as other tennis players, but we have to play by the rules of tennis. And WBAI and Pacifica cannot be exempt from those things, regardless of how much we want to say, then in a sense it is progressive, and playing by the rules does not mean I don't find it as a contradiction then to the ideas that are espoused. I think that sometimes people feel that way, that as I said earlier, you know you use the term corporation. It is a corporation. It is like you know, somebody who murders people is a human being, but it doesn't mean that because then he's a human being or she's a human being and murders people that I'm going to now shy away from defining myself as a human being. You know, it is just that. And I think that we have to have that type of understanding when we come into this arena. Because if we come in fearful of anything, or if we come in not wanting to come, let me say, with the full weight of what we are, that we want to leave certain things at the door, that we're not going to be able to find our way, we're not going to be able to define what and who we are, and we will not be able to proceed along then a path in connection or in sync with those things that we expose as ideals, because somewhere along the line we're going to be afraid, and from the time we enter the arena of fear, we've already failed in our mission, regardless of what we write on paper, because, again, it is not what is written, it is what is practiced ultimately that is going to define everything. We have, like, just a couple more minutes, so anything in terms of a closing statement, now is a good time for it.
Yes, I'd like to add what you're saying is that the idea of having an election, a listener-sponsored or listener-election, is exactly taking that risk that some people are afraid of. You know, that's why we're espousing the concept of election. And then within any election, there's a risk that things might not turn out exactly the way we would like it to turn out. I'd like to say to all who are for, against, ambivalent about this whole process, to do trust the listeners. Do trust the listeners. And the listeners will deliver.
Thank you, Han. And as I say, the final words or last words, I don't... But, Patty.
All right. I want to say Pacifica is still in crisis. Is still in a crisis. And until we get these elected people in place, recallable, accountable, we are in trouble. And that is still not going to save us completely, because then we have to work towards changing the culture of this network into power sharing between all the groups, the listeners and the staff, the lowly listeners, the lowly staff, and then those people that have a title. And so I think that I beg those of you listening out there to become a member of this foundation and to you know, participate, that we can keep this radio station. No, nowhere is there such a network as this, and it must be saved. Therefore, don't, you know, try not to sit idly by all the horrible things you may have heard tonight. Don't let them deter you. We can only make them better. We can only improve this network by demanding transparency, by demanding to participate, and by asking people to be accountable. And if that happens, you know, we're on our way. And I hope to see, and someday to see this place crawling with young people and people I've never heard on the radio before having shows.
One correction, younger people. Please.
Younger people, please.
That's it. And before I go, I just want to say one of the things that you just said about things not necessarily turning out how you would like. And that is something we cannot be afraid of. If we put in place what we consider to be a just system, then the old expression is, the voice of the people is the voice of God. And we should not be afraid of then how things turn out. Because if we have what we consider to be a fair and a just system in place, then we must be willing to accept whatever the results are, and understand that that is a part of the process. That is, let me put it this way, that we're supposed to be able to can create something that can throw us out of office. That would mean then that we're not going and writing something to entrench ourselves, but that we're writing something that is fully open within the process, or within the parameters of being democratic, of being fair, of being just, so that when justice happens, when something happens fairly, we cannot have any objection to it. It might not be in sync with how we think or how we feel, but we have to say then that we are willing to bow